Welcome to the MMA Roadshow episode number 19. Sitting in paradise right now with my good friend Alex Davis. We are still in Brazil. It is Tuesday afternoon as we sit down to record this, and something that's become a little bit of a tradition. We've made it out to your farm to spend a couple of days. We just finished a long hike through the jungle up to a beautiful waterfall. It was just absolutely incredible. So thank you for having me out. Where exactly are we? I know we're about 2 hours outside of Rio de Janeiro. What is this area called?
We're about maybe 60, 70 miles outside of Rio, in the northeast part of Rio. We're in the middle of the Atlantic rainforest. If you walk backwards from my house, it'll take you 20 hours to get to civilization again. And as large as the place is, people don't realize that there's only about 7% of this type of rainforest left. So I'm really blessed to own and be able to share with my friends a unique piece of property and nature that's still pristine, you know. So it's a real privilege for me, and it's a privilege to be able to share it with you.
It's beautiful, man. I know that, you know, there's been a couple of trips of people that have made it out here, and we all take pictures and share them, but man, I just tell people, if you have the opportunity to come out here, do it, because the pictures don't do it justice. And this is a land that's been in your family for quite some time, yeah?
Yeah, my grandmother was a botanist. My grandfather was a naturalist and a doctor in chemistry. And they came here before the Second World War in 1936, and they built the place. And I've kept this place, my family has kept this place the way it is since that time, you know, because as we know, in other places, especially Brazil, the rainforest has been cut down, and we didn't cut it down. I mean, our house, we have septic tank, and we have sumps, and we really protect our land. There's no trash, no human dejects whatsoever.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, that's the good side of the day. The bad side of the day is we literally just left your office a couple of minutes ago, where we saw Ray Sefo make the announcement that Husamar Palhares has been stripped of his World Series of Fighting welterweight title, and he's been suspended indefinitely by the organization until the Nevada State Athletic Commission finishes with their investigation, and then they'll decide what to do. Just want to get your first reaction. Obviously, you're his manager. And thanks for knocking that fly off my face. I appreciate that. What are your initial thoughts hearing this? I know it's still kind of soaking in. I'm sure that you've got to review some contracts and like that. But what's your initial thoughts?
Well, you know, this situation is so complex, and there's so many variables in it that it's even hard to put everything into a simple phrase. You know, I mean, it's true. I mean, Rosemar, he zones out when he fights, you know, and people are talking about him holding on to submissions too long. And in my from my perspective, that's not the worst part. The part is that he cranks him too far,
right?
You know, and it's happened. It's happened. It's happened again, you know, and it's kind of a fact. I mean, I think that we have a lot of other variables, for example, refs that know how he is in the fight are too far away and take too long to get there. This fight, for example, Mazzagatti was too far away and was in his back, not in front. But you can't only blame the refs for that. You know, the fact is he cranks things too far. Okay, and I can't explain it. We've put him psychologist. We've done everything we can. But then I have to bring us back to the fact that there are other people that do that, that there are people that get knocked down and take four or five punches to the face, and it's part of the sport. I don't think it's right because of that, but it is part of the sport. I think that if you're going to punish Rosemar, and if he deserves it, you got to punish a lot of other people, you know. That's true.
I think, you know, you and I watched the fight together, and it granted, with the it was standard definition at best. And I think at first you didn't really feel too bad about it, and thought, you know, the eye pokes is what people are talking about a lot, the eye gouging. And at first you said, I don't think he did it, and I was watching with you, and I didn't think either. I thought he just put his hand across the face to try to clear out of the position, but you found a better copy of it later, and I think now you do believe he probably did gouge the eyes a little.
Well, you know, it's a tough situation there, because the guy, you have Jake Shields trying to put pressure on him, and he's got his hands up in Jake Shields' face, and the fingers are going to the eyes. Now, is it on purpose? Is it not on purpose? I can't tell you. I mean, you can say it's accidental. You can say it's not accidental. It's still illegal. You know, and that's a fact. You know, I love Rosemar. I respect. He's one of the best athletes I have. He is one of the most dangerous athletes on the planet. These are fights, but it's still illegal. You know, so you can't really. What am I going to say?
Do you think, and you said it, and I know because I've talked to you about it in the past, it's tough to explain, you don't really know, but do you think maybe this will be something that causes Husamar to wake up a little bit or to pay more attention to what he's doing, or does he just go to a different place when he's in the cage? I mean, what do you think? Could this be a wake-up call?
You know, I mean, we've had wake-up calls. I think he just goes into a different place when he fights. He goes beyond. He takes fighting beyond the sport. It's a real fight for him, and he goes to finish it, you know. And in one sense, that's what people want to see,
right,
until they see it.
Yeah.
And then they don't want to see it, you know. And there's rules, and you have to abide by the rules. There's other variables also, you know. It's not only the time it takes for him to let go and other stuff, it's also the fact that, you know, the villain, when you have a villain, it's great for people to latch onto that villain and trash him. And so where's the middle point?
Yeah.
How far is he wrong, and how far is the media taking it farther than it's supposed to be,
right?
You know, there's so many variables. How many people have come out and used him to look good and create traffic, you know? So it's such a complex situation. I myself, and I'm a very experienced at managing fighters. I've done this for a long time, and I'm very honest to say that I've never been up against a situation like this.
What do you do now? Do you still got to wait and see what the commission decides before you really take a stand one way or the other?
Well, there's a few things. I'm hearing now that WSOF is saying that they are going to suspend him, strip him of the title. They have the right to do that. They're going to suspend him indefinitely on the contract. They do not have the right to do that. So there's contractual things. If they don't want him, if they don't think he's a good fighter to have in their roster, just let him go. We'll take him someplace else. You can't do that. There's a lot of things in the MMA world that are not, you know, people say things. When you look on the paper, that is not what is stated in the contract.
Right.
So we have to go by the contract there. Of course, we need to wait for the Nevada State Athletic Commission to come out with their investigation. But this thing about being suspended indefinitely, so, John, let's say I murder somebody and I get put into jail for life.
Right.
That's not indefinitely. That's
right.
For life.
Right.
So this is wrong. You know, this is not the way it is. You know, you don't – this thing suspending for indefinitely, that illegally you can't do that.
Right. Yeah, they've got to come up with an answer pretty soon within a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah.
They can't just leave him on the shelf.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think if they decide that they don't want him, I think you let him go, and then a fight with Ben Askren sure would be enticing to me over in ONE FC, or excuse me, just one championship now.
Well, you know, I mean, he'll want to keep on fighting. He regardless of what's happened so far, he still is a great fighter. It's really unfortunate. I mean, I don't like the way Jake carried himself. I don't like the way he's built it up. I don't like the way he's used Rosimar's image to make himself look good. But I have to give it to him. He fought like a lion in there,
fight.
You know. And Rosimar fought like a lion. And it's a great fight. And it's a pity that this fight was marred by that, because everybody wants to see that transition of technique. They both give out great. I mean, the fight was all over the place, you know. And I think that the most unfortunate part of this whole situation is that a beautiful fight like that gets marred by this situation. And I don't think WSOF is handling the whole thing correctly either. You know, I think that it's such an unfortunate situation. Like I said, so many variables. It's a whole build up to this situation. You know, like I said, 15 years doing this, and I've never been up against a situation like this.
Well, if they do keep him around, hopefully they'll do a rematch, because it was a fantastic fight. Maybe they can work out all their differences in the cage and see what happens. If Jake's up for it, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Jake will be, I don't want to say intimidated, but not want to get in the cage with him anymore because he's fearful of what might happen. But I sure would love to see the fight again.
Yeah, I think that whatever happened in that fight, Jake Shields lost the fight.
Right.
And that is a fact. I mean, let's go by the facts. Jake Shields lost that fight. Bottom line, you can say whatever it was, this was that, but Jake Shields lost. He got submitted. He tapped. I don't think anybody's ever done that to him, and it got done to him, you know. So, you know, I mean, regardless of what happens, Jake Shields lost the fight.
Well, I want to talk to you about another situation that you brought up that I found kind of interesting. It's kind of made me look at things a little different, and that is Edson Barboza. His last fight, he mentioned the fact that Paul Felder was getting some additional coaching from his good friend Donald Cerrone, who was sitting cage side as a guest of Dana White. Basically, he came up to the front and sat right there. And it's interesting first that Edson picked up on that, and I wanted to kind of elaborate on a little bit what happened. But you know, it may seem kind of trivial, but it really did. I've really started to pay attention now since you mentioned this, and it's just a couple weeks ago. But, you know, when fighters do have special guests or whatever sitting cage side, that can turn into another cornerman. We saw it in Brazil on Saturday night. Jose Aldo, during one of the tough Brazil finales, was sitting cage side, and he was standing up, yelling instructions in a grappling exchange. And it's interesting because that's not supposed to happen.
Yeah, you know, I think that everybody wants to see a fair sport, you know, and as you get up that competitive pyramid, all the little details make a big difference, you know. So, you know, the rules today state that you can have three corner men in your corner, right? And, for example, when there's a eye poke or groin thing, the fighter has to go to a neutral corner, correct?
Right.
But now if you have somebody in that neutral corner, that corner is not neutral anymore,
that's
okay?
Right.
And if you have somebody at the other end of the ring giving instructions, now you have two corners. That's wrong. Just wrong. I mean, there's nothing else you can say than that is being wrong. Edson said that he was hearing Cerrone more than he was hearing his own corner. So that's an unfortunate fact. We're still in an embryonic sport, and we still have to look at these details, and we have to correct them.
Yeah.
You know?
It just needs to be brought up. It's something that I think it was an oversight, you know, probably on the USC's part. I mean, they need to tell guys, hey, listen, yeah, you can definitely sit here, but you can't be coaching from here. And the commission needs to pay attention to that. You know, if that's a teammate that's essentially coaching, like you said, you've taken a neutral corner and you've eliminated that. And it's just a small minor detail, but it's something that really should be taken care of. Did Edson bother him during the fight? Was it frustrating him, or did he just – was he able to get past it?
I think that Edson was concentrating on the fight, and he fought through everything. But that does not change the issue.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, Edson was like, yeah, well, okay, I don't care. I was fighting, and that doesn't change the issue. You know, we have to make sure that the sport's fair for everybody, you know, and that's a small issue that has to be corrected. You can't have a guy on the other side of the octagon, if he's a guest, a translator, whatever he is, he can't be giving instructions. It's just wrong.
Sure was a great fight, though. I hope those guys meet up again sometime.
John, I'll tell you, I was shitting in my pants because I knew that fight could have gone either way. I mean, a knockout could have come out there. Edson could have got knocked out, or Felder could have knocked out. I'd like to say this about Felder. He's a great, great fighter and a great guy. You know, and he came in there and stepped up to that plate, and I think he's probably one of the only guys in the whole roster that can stand toe-to-toe with Barboza and bang it out like that. And Barboza was very smart. He kept his defense up, moved around. He fought a very, very conscious fight. I think that this Edson that we're seeing now will definitely make a run for the title.
Yep, he's getting better and better. Saturday night, UFC 190, we had a chance to see Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira fight for the last time. Afterwards, Dana White said, hey, listen, I'm not interested in promoting his fights anymore, but I will offer him a job, you know, similar to Forrest Griffin, similar to Chuck Liddell, where he remains financially taken care of without really probably having to do too much other than he'll probably just go to USC events. You know, we haven't talked to Big Nog about that, but I'm assuming he'll be okay with that. I can't imagine him wanting to go fight for Bellator or World Series or a regional show. Maybe he would, but I think he'd be okay with that. But I just want to ask you, man, you were there from the beginning. We were looking last night on your kitchen table, pictures of Nogueira before his first professional fight, before his second professional fight. So kind of seeing his career seemingly come to a close this past weekend. What's it been like to be there for the whole ride?
Well, you know, I was his first manager. I was at his first fight. I got him his fights in Japan. We had a school together. And Rodrigo, even before he started MMA, he got run over by a truck. He already had a lot of damage, you know, and the damage is accumulated. And if somebody that really knows what they're looking at, they can see that there are certain angles that Rodrigo cannot move. Like when he caught Stefan Struve's back, a healthy Rodrigo would have never lost the position.
Right.
There was an angle there that he couldn't follow Struve with, you know. So the lion has to come down off the mountain someday. You know, emotionally it's very difficult because emotionally he's that heart's still in there beating, you know. And Rodrigo's a guy that if you cut him to little pieces, those pieces are going to keep on moving forward. If you watch the Struve fight, he never backed up once. He kept on moving forward through the punch, through the anything. And that's the great thing about Rodrigo. That's what's made him a hero. That's made him what he is. I'm proud of him. I don't care if he loses or wins, you know. I think we all should be proud of him. I think not only is his humbleness outside the ring, and his warrior spirit inside the ring. It's something that everybody has to keep in mind and emulate, you know?
It's incredible because he took some good shots. So even as much damage as he's gone through and as many wars as he's been in, he still has a chin. It's not one of those guys that you go, oh, gosh, if he gets hit again, he's going to get knocked out. But what you pointed to was so true, and going back and watching the fight, just, you know, getting a position, you know, getting mount and not being able to keep it because he can't move the hips the same way. You can't move your body the same way. And I think we all kind of realized that wasn't, you know, that wasn't Rodrigo at his finest, but still, still, as you said, a warrior. And it's just been so cool since we've been coming down here in 2011 to see the respect and admiration that he has. I mean, I try to tell people, it's difficult to understand. Anderson Silva, when he was during his title run, he was a superstar. But Nogueira is something different. Like, it's even beyond that. It's just, like, legend.
Yeah, I mean, it's just obvious. It's something that nobody can argue. Winning or losing, the guy has, for years and years and years, faced anything, everything thrown at him and has never moved backwards. You don't see him moving around the ring. All you see is him moving forward, you know. Rogério put it very well. He said, Rodrigo, when he fights, he gets hit, he gets pissed, and keeps on moving forward.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And probably the inventor of the term Brazilian time, Rodrigo has been late to everything I've ever seen. He just does not abide by the clock.
Well, Rodrigo, now he's getting older, he got a little bit better than that. But Rodrigo has missed enough flights to buy an apartment. Okay. his great saying was just a minute. Just a minute. That's always been like him. You know, I always poke fun at those two. We call them the turtle and the anchor.
The turtle and the anchor.
Yeah, that's one of their nicknames here, you know, because they're always slow. And I've had so many funny cases with them when they had to be on places on time and on flights on time, and they go out through the hallway of the hotel with socks and underwear all over the place. And, yeah, they can't. That's one part. You know, Rogério tried to go to law school and try to be a lawyer and try to put a suit on. And I tell you, it was a good thing he started fighting because he wasn't going nowhere with that.
I did not know that. That's fantastic. Well, also UFC 190, we saw another one of your longtime clients, Antonio Bigfoot Silva, pick up a big win. Emotional moment with you backstage. He nearly bowled you over. Big moment for him. Obviously, he needed to get a win. And he was in trouble for a little bit, but he fought through it at the end of the first round and then came out and proved just how, you know, dangerous he is in the second round. I mean, one uppercut really changed everything. But big win for him. I think he's right back in contendership. He's always up for big fights. But tell me a little bit about that. Obviously, that emotion. It's obvious that you guys are close. And I know you guys have been through some interesting times over the years.
Yeah, it's been interesting to push that guy uphill for these last 8 years. I love him. He's my father, my son's godfather. I mean, arguing and bitching and everything, he's still always going to be like a son to me. We were in a tough spot, you know. He didn't look very good in his last two fights. He'd just been through surgery for acromegaly. I think the hormone levels weren't good, and he, you know, if you look at the Mike Kyle fight and the Cormier fight, he would lock up a little bit in the beginning of fights, and we changed that. We kind of changed a little bit our attitude before the fight to make sure that he didn't get overwhelmed with a lot of information, and I guess everybody saw the difference. And I'll tell you right now, when he came out of the arena and saw me, I mean, that was scary. I don't know what's worse, when he's angry or if he's happy, because I thought I was going to get my ass kicked and run over.
He did. That was a great scene. I guess the American audience probably didn't get to see it, but with Combate down there in Brazil, they basically just leave the feet open, so you kind of get to see a little bit of that backstage moment. I kind of wish we got that same presentation in the United States, because it's really cool to see that emotion. So, well, it looks like lunch is being served, and it looks pretty incredible. It looks like the team has done a fantastic
job.
John,
you only think about lunch, man.
I am. I've got this ice cold Brahma here in front of me that's going down well, but that plate of food that young Mike Bond has over there is looking pretty incredible, so I'm going to do that. But before we do, I want to get the story from you. I took a picture as we were going through these pictures last night of things that, you know, just cool little spots and memories. And you brought up a very famous brawl, shall we say, that just blew up in the arena that was at a Hermes Franca fight.
Yeah.
So take us back. But before we eat this fantastic lunch, tell us that story.
Well, there was the show called World Extreme Fighting, and it was a great – I mean, it was Jamie Levine. He died, unfortunately. And it was a show in Steubenville, Indiana, right outside near Pittsburgh, you know. And what happened there is we had one of our guys debuting against a guy, the kid that was a hometown hero, a D1 wrestler, you know. And the funny thing, and you can ask Frank Mir, he'll remember that. When we got into the stadium, and there was two or three Brazilians on the card that we were bringing, the announcer said, "We're going to kick a lot of Brazilian ass tonight." And we said, "Uh-oh, this is not looking good." So anyway, we get to the fight for the D1 wrestlers fighting our guy, and somebody's throwing cans at our corner. So Mark Aurelio, who fought in the UFC, fought in Pride, submitted Gomi. You know, and just before I get there, we had Frank Mir, we had Marco Aurelio, we had Libório, Conan, myself, Hermes Frank. I mean, bro, a lot of celebrities. In those days, nobody celebrated. Frank Mir in those days was a purple belt.
Wow.
So what happens is somebody's throwing cans at the corner, and Marco Aurelio, he looked through the crowd, poked through the crowd, saw who was throwing it, and sucker punched him. And I have never seen an event come apart so fast. There were a bunch of chairs around the octagon, and chairs were flying all over the place. There was one dude that lifted the chair to hit Conan, and Conan looked at him and said, "I'd put that down if I were you." And Frank Mir caught somebody in an armbar, and we had to hide Frank Mir out in the car because everybody was looking for somebody who broke somebody's arm. And Wade Rome, I mean, Brazilians, they're smart. They're not leaving there. They're moving around and ducking, but Wade had his face up, and he got hit right in the face with the chair. That's in the picture there, you know. But the most amazing part of the whole story is after the event is demolished and the chairs are all over the place and the fight's all over the place, everybody but to put the chairs back and put everything back, and the fight continues. And I've never seen anything like that, even Brazil. I tell you, a fight like that in Brazil, the event would have ended. But that day, they put everything back in place, and the fight continued.
That is awesome. That is the old school Wild West days of MMA for sure.
I talked to Frank Mir a while ago. We were in the locker room, one of the events, and we had a good laugh about that one.
That's awesome. Well, brother, it's good catching up with you. Thank you for the last 2 days here at your ranch. It's been fantastic. And now let's go get some of that good-looking food.
Cool. We're ready.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. My man Mike Bond has sat down and joined me. We have literally just finished eating lunch out here at Alex Davis's ranch. And Mike, you've been here in Brazil for your first time for a full week now. You've seen the city in Rio de Janeiro. You've seen the more lush landscape outside of it. 7 days into your Brazilian trip, what do you think about the country so far?
It's amazing. Pretty much everything I was hoping for and more. I didn't really know what to expect coming out to the ranch. Of course, you see pictures of Rio de Janeiro and those kind of things, and you kind of fantasize about it in your head, and it's pretty much everything that I expected and hoped for. But coming out here, it's just a different world, you know. This ranch, it's amazing. We're completely surrounded by mountains and rainforests. Within 2 feet of me, I have a dog, a cat, and a donkey. It's just it's just unreal. It's hard to even put into words. I mean, you could go, you know, on my Instagram, whatever, see some pictures, but that doesn't nearly do this place justice. It's amazing. I very much am jealous and envy Alex the fact that he gets to live out here, and this is, you know, his life for the most part. It's just incredible.
Completely agree with you, man. It's really, really, really amazing. I always enjoy the trips out here. It's so relaxing. And we're leaving shortly. I'm actually jumping on a plane to head back to Miami, but you're going to stick around for a couple extra days and go do some sightseeing, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I figured come all the way down here from Canada, long trip, might as well make it worth it, use some of my well-earned vacation days, and yeah, just going to enjoy a few more days down here. It's awesome.
Very nice. Well, this past Saturday night, we were here for UFC 190, of course. Ronda Rousey, incredible superstar, amazing performance. Just talk about, you know, your take on watching her. Again, you know, we talked about it last week a little bit, but saying going into the fight that she was going to drag it out, I just don't think either one of us really bought into that was going to happen. But she did say she wanted to beat Betch Kohei in the most embarrassing way possible. And I've got to say, getting face planted from a Ronda Rousey right hand when she's supposed to be the submission master and you're supposed to be the heavy hitter, I think that probably was the most embarrassing way possible.
Yeah, definitely. And it's the way she finished it. There's no possible way to drag it out. You knocked her out cold. That's the end of an MMA fight right there, no matter the circumstances. So she pretty much had the perfect performance. It was definitely an embarrassing result for Correa, just because, you know, ever since women got into the UFC, we haven't seen a knockdown from a standing strike, or a knockout, I should say. We've seen people get dropped. We saw Ronda knock, you know, cripple Sarah McMahon with a knee to the body. We've seen, you know, we saw Jessica Ai get dropped by Misha Tate just earlier last month, but nothing like this. We haven't seen just a one-shot, one-hitter quitter, someone fall down, and that's the fight. It was unbelievable, and Ronda Rousey did that. Happened right in front of us on press row. The sound of Betch's face as she hit the mat. Being there in person, I don't know if it came through on television, but being there in person, I'll never forget that sound. It was just unbelievable. The eruption from the crowd, just that entire moment. That performance was spectacular. I didn't see that coming. I didn't think it was going to be a clean knockout like that. And just all hail Ronda Rousey, right? She is just something else. Something so unbelievable.
It was incredible. I mean, you know, we saw all week long that she was welcomed as the superstar. And on fight night, it was a little different. I mean, there was some staunch Kohea supporters there. It was pretty loud. And there was, you know, the boos and that sort of thing. So it ended up being a pretty electric atmosphere with fans cheering for both people. And obviously, the moment felt big. I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of people get upset when people say, you know, Ronda Rousey is like Mike Tyson, MMA's Mike Tyson. And, you know, certainly there's reason you can say it's not. But I kind of like the comparison because I really do feel like when Mike Tyson was in his prime, people really didn't care who he was fighting. It was just the Tyson fight. I'm going to watch the Tyson fight. That's it. And I feel like that's where Ronda is at these days. That I don't think people care so much. I mean, this did have some backstory, all the comments about suicide and the father and all those things. So there was, you know, some story here and some reason to buy into it. An undefeated contender who had beaten a couple of her friends and had basically called her out. And there was all that. But I just think at this point, I mean, Ronda's like a cultural phenomenon. I just feel like people tune in to watch and don't know why or what they're watching or who, you know, and don't care. They just want to watch Ronda fight.
Yep, that's definitely it. Especially now, Betch did a better job selling this fight than anyone has, any of Ronda's previous opponents, maybe except Misha Tate. I think she even did a better job. And at this point, going forward, yeah, I really agree. It doesn't matter who she's really fighting. People want to see Ronda Rousey fight. They're not there to see the opponent. They're not there to see, you know, is this finally going to be the one where she gets tested or loses? They want to see her go out there and win every fight in 30 seconds. They don't care if that's, you know, who it's against, what fashion it's in. It's just the Ronda Rousey fight, and she's done such a great job of, you know, finishing all these opponents in spectacular fashion. Each one is better than the last, it seems, and it's just incredible. She's more than just another MMA fighter, a superstar MMA fighter. Go look at the past few days since that fight happened. Every single notable major media outlet, TV shows, everything. You know, someone said on the baseball game last night that on a Houston, I think it was Houston Astros game, I believe Jeremy Barr tweeted it, that one of the pitchers was warming up and he says, you know, he's taken longer to throw this pitch than a Ronda Rousey fight. Wow. Like, you know, she's becoming a cultural, you know, just part of the culture referring to a Ronda Rousey fight. This is going to take longer than a Ronda Rousey fight. It's just crazy what she's been able to do, and she is just, she's almost just bigger than MMA at this point, bigger than the UFC.
It's incredible.
It's amazing.
As our boss, Dan Stupp, tweeted out, I mean, we did record numbers traffic-wise and not even close. I mean, just like almost doubled our previous record day, which is incredible to think. I mean, that's the type of attention she commands. You and I were sitting the other night and talking, you know, about what comes next and how we think things play out. And I do feel like the Cyborg fight is going to happen at some point. I don't know exactly when, but I think it's going to happen. I think it does need to happen at 135, but I think if it gets to a point, Ronda may just move up to 140 maybe and at least to get done, because I think she wants to get that fight done. But I think she wants to beat some other people first. But looking at what's ahead on the table for, we know Misha Tate's up next. I wonder, I mean, would a shorter career be better? I mean, because she could walk away right now and just be like, listen, I accomplished what I accomplished. I put women's MMA on the map. Now I'm going to go do Hollywood. But, I mean, I still want to see her fight, you know. So I just wonder what the best option is for her. I mean, do you think it is fight for another 5 years and keep beating people that everybody knows you're better than? Or do you think it's, you know, win a couple fights, you know, beat Misha again, get Cyborg in there at some point? I guess Holly Holm is probably a name that people want to see fight, even though Holly hasn't exactly just wrecked shop in her UFC run so far. What do you think the course of action is going
to
be?
Yeah, excuse me. It's hard to say with the – we don't know how many fights she has left. Speaking to her, you know, in interviews and everything, she says that she doesn't even know. She says if she keeps going in there and knocking fools out in 30 seconds, submitting them in 30 seconds, she could do this for years.
Yeah.
But what will happen if she does go in there, if someone actually pushes her, gets a 5-round 4, she gets some cuts on her face, you know, bloody nose, these kind of things in a fight, take some damage. I think then she'll have to reassess and we'll have a better grip on how long she's around for. But I believe her. If she wants, keeps going in there and starching these opponents like that, I could see her sticking around for a few more years. But it's just, we're all just waiting for the Cyborg fight. It's the first question at the press conference after she wins every time. It's just, it's what everyone wants to see. And Dana White came out after that event, after 190, and said, you know, Ronda versus Cyborg would do 2.5 million buys. And whether or not you believe that, are they really not going to put that fight together because of 5 pounds? That's really hard for me to believe, you know?
Right.
Dana White saying, you know, that's going to sell 2.5 million, but we're not going to do it just because of 5 pounds, just because she can't make the weight. Really? Like, come on.
He's a businessman.
Yeah, I don't buy that at all. And I understand the belts. They want the belt to be on the line in case Ronda does lose. You want that situation where you have the new champion, the person who beat her, that you could sell off.
Right.
So I understand it from that perspective, but still, that's the fight we're all waiting for. And from here to there, you know, I'm sure we will see Holly Holm. We'll see Misha Tate again. We'll see whoever else pops up in that weight class. But right now, it's just Ronda's world, and she just kind of has everyone by the balls right now. What she wants to do is what's going to happen. If she wants to hang him up tomorrow, UFC is going to have to deal with this. She wants to fight 5 more years. It's good for everyone in the sport, as you said, you know, record traffic.
This, I like it. People, if you could fight 5 times a year, it'd be great for me.
Exactly. People are saying things about, you know, did this hit 1 million pay-per-views, just the social media stats, everything. It seems like all of it's there, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger every time she fights. So right now, she is in an awesome place. People get to cover and watch the sport. Everyone is reaping the benefits off this Ronda Rousey phenomenon. So personally, I hope it goes on as long as possible. As long as she wants to do it, I'll be happy to watch her fights and cover her fights and continue talking about her, because she really is amazing on so many levels. We could probably sit here for hours and talk about, you know, the repercussions with her impact on women in sports and all these things. It's just, it's so amazing what she's done.
It really is. And being the superstar she is makes a glaring error of ours very apparent. That is that our rankings that we have at MMA Junkie and USA Today, we don't have women's divisions ranked. And I can tell you that we have talked about it. It is an IT thing more than a desire and effort thing. We need to have one of our programmers go in and recode the site so that we can have it. But I think that's coming sooner rather than later. Obviously, the 135-pound division is very well established now. The 115-pound division is also, I think, very well established. It would have been tough in the beginning, I think, when you first launched it, to have rankings, because you really haven't let everybody settle out a little bit. But I think now it's apparent that we need both. But it's interesting because I got asked by one of our editors at USA Today when we were going to put Ronda Rousey on the pound-for-pound list with the men's fighters. And it's an interesting debate, an interesting discussion topic. Like, if we do women's rankings, do we need to have a women's pound-for-pound ranking too? Or do you say Ronda, if she's going to be on the pound-for-pound list, is going to be ranked next to the men? And how do you justify it? What do you think the right course of action is?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I like the idea of having, you know, separate pound-for-pound rankings for women. I think that just makes more sense because, you know, how we don't need any more of this discussion of women fighting men. How would they compare? Ronda Rousey, Floyd Mayweather, all these things, that's just endless discussion. It's pointless because it's never going to happen. So why start debating, you know, if you put Ronda Rousey higher in the rankings than TJ Dillashaw, what's the reasoning there? Do you really, like, are we saying that they actually fought, or if Ronda Rousey was a man with her same skill set? Like, you know, it's almost pointless in my mind. Let's just do it separate. I know it's awesome. We have them mixed together on cards, fighting women's cards, or, you know, Ronda Rousey's headlining a card full of men, but it's a different sport. It's a different, you know, level at this point. Ronda Rousey is obviously something special, but you go look at some other women's MMA, it's just not quite there up with the male counterparts quite yet. That'll obviously change in time, but I don't see any point in mixing them together quite yet. Ronda Rousey is a dominant female. She's the best female fighter, you know, in the world, probably. The whole Cyborg thing is a debate, but that's what we should be debating. Who's number 1 and 2 pound for pound between Rousey and Cyborg, not who's number 1 pound for pound between Rousey and, you know, John Jones or something like that. It's too complicated. And, you know, pound for pound rankings in general, you could say, is a pointless discussion. But if you're going to make me decide, I'd like to keep it separate because I just think that's the best way to do it.
I tend to agree with you as well. I mean, pound-for-pound rankings are such a hypothetical discussion anyway. It's kind of a ridiculous to get in a debate. Like, you know, I think within the divisional rankings, you know, when we have our rankings and we definitely put some thought into them, I know that you're, you know, part of the discussion each week, and we definitely put some thought into them. It's, you know, not everybody's going to agree with it. I get it, man. It's, rankings are always going to be a little bit subjective, so people are going to have their disagreements. But, you know, if people want to talk about, well, why do you have so-and-so here and so-and-so here in the welterweight division or the bantamweight division, I can usually have a discussion. But, you know, when it comes to pound-for-pound, if somebody's like, dude, your number eight guy is wrong, it should be this guy, and these two should be flip-flopped, I'm just like, all right, man. You know, like, I can't discuss that.
There's way more freedom. It's completely up for debate. There's no true criteria. Everyone seems to have their own definition of what pound for pound really means. And, yeah, it is kind of it's fun to talk about, you know, these fighters in different divisions that'll never actually get to fight each other, who's better, all this stuff. But, you know, there's so many other things going on in MMA that I think are more worthy of our discussion and our attention that when people bring up pound for pound and get their panties in a bunch about it, I really just don't. You know, I don't care too much about it and don't sweat too much about it either.
I agree. Well, what definitely demands our attention right now is people riding around on a donkey here just outside of us. So, unfortunately, my flight back to the United States is coming in a couple hours, and it's about that time to pack up and head on and leave paradise, unfortunately, because the weather is perfect. This is the Brazilian winter, and it's like 75 degrees out here. I mean, this is
it's nicer than our, you know, summers in Canada.
It's bizarre, right? Like, they're just like roughing it through a harsh, brutal winter.
Yes, I feel so bad for them.
All right, man. Well, enjoy the rest of your time in Brazil. What are you looking forward to the most? Is there anything on your agenda, or is it just kind of figure out the days as it goes?
Yeah, I'd like, you know, the major sites, of course, Christ the Redeemer. Never got the chance to go up there this week. That's, you know, one of the man-made wonders of the world. Haven't had the chance to see any of those before. So that's definitely something that, you know, as a tourist, you got to go check out. But I'm just interested in really seeing everything. It's going to be hard to top what we've seen out here these past couple days at Alex Davis's ranch. But, you know, it's an amazing trip. I'm just soaking it all in.
Perfect, brother. All right, well, enjoy it. And, we'll see you back in North America soon.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. I am John Morgan, and we have moved on from Brazil, unfortunately, I must say, and are back in Las Vegas. Now, always good to be home, especially after a long time away. And Las Vegas is not a bad place to be, but cannot stress to you enough what an absolute paradise Alex Davis's ranch is out there. So I hope you enjoyed the interviews that we had out there, first of all, with Alex Davis. And I want to encourage you to check out the Instagram at the MMA Roadshow for some of the photos that I was actually kind of just retaking, essentially stealing his photos and putting them up on Instagram, because you know, these pictures were taken well before the digital age. It's a whole bunch of you know, printed out pictures that he has in his home there in Brazil, and it was really cool to see, especially given the historic things that did happen at UFC 190. You know, seeing those pictures of Antonio Rigo Nogueira before his first and second pro fight the same weekend that he was ultimately retiring. Now, as we said going in, maybe not the decision hasn't been made, but it looks like for all intents and purposes. So hopefully you enjoyed listening to Alex Davis, and hope you enjoyed listening to the young Mike Bond as well. Worth checking out his Instagram as well, as he's been posting some vacation pictures. He stayed down in Brazil for a couple extra days and certainly enjoyed the sights down there. It's a great place to be, man. It really is. It's a unique country. Certainly has its challenges, but it's a fantastic place to go. So as I said, back in Las Vegas now, I flew home with my mom. Really did want to say, first of all, just she was nonstop gushing over the entire experience and what a fantastic experience it was. And I think that was really a lot of people's experience after UFC 190. It was just blown away at how amazing Ronda Rousey really is and what a unique event it was. So very happy that I could go there, number one, and number two, that my mom could experience as well. So hopefully you were able to enjoy her interview on episode number 18 of the podcast. If you didn't, you should go back and listen to it. I can assure you that she will not be listening to that again. She practically begged me to get rid of it and was embarrassed by her Texas twang. So I guess I don't hear it quite as bad because I grew up and she is my mom, but I do know that us Texan folk do have a little twang here and there, and she felt hers was especially strong that night. So anyway, really enjoyed getting to share that with my mom. Now, you know, talking to Alex Davis, we did get to talk about the Husamar Pahara's experience, and sort of I was still taking it in at the time, and now that I've had a couple of days to reflect on it, I really just did want to offer up my opinion as well. It's not often that I get a chance to really weigh in editorially, and I think this is a great outlet to do that. And I've got to say, I applaud World Series of Fighting for the move they made in as far as suspending Husamar Pahara and stripping of the title. I think there's just been too many incidents. And you'll remember back when they first brought Husamar Pahara into the World Series of Fighting, they made it clear, hey, listen, if there are any issues, we're going to, you know, we're giving them a second chance, but we're going to handle these things as strongly as we can. I think they're living up to that. I will say, I do think they made one small mistake, and that was saying that they were suspending him indefinitely. I think that's something that Alex Davis is pretty frustrated about, and I can understand why, because the promotion really doesn't have the right to suspend him indefinitely. I think what they meant was, and maybe they worded incorrectly, maybe the memo just went out wrong, but they're suspending him temporarily, to be honest with you, until the Nevada State Athletic Commission finishes with its hearing and its investigation. And I think that's smart, just saying, listen, we're going to let the commission make their decision first, and we'll make our decision after that. And I think that's a smart way to do it for World Series of Fighting. As for Husamar himself, man, I had the opportunity to interview this guy for years and years. Really, honestly, wrote one of, I don't want to say my favorite stories, but one of the most memorable stories of my career, explaining that scar that's on his chest. If you've ever seen, you know, a picture of Husamar Pahara, you'll see there's a nasty scar across his chest. And I was, Alex Davis has long been his manager. I was kind of talking to him about that, and this is back in his USC days, and kind of wanted to get to know Husamar a little bit better. And we sat down and started talking about Husamar's childhood and where he came from. I mean, the guy was one of 10 children, was so poor that, you know, they had to eat pig slop at some times, just, I mean, barely making it by. I guess perhaps ironically, considering his name is Toquinho, I mean, he didn't have much education. He had to get out there and work the fields. And one day, while working the fields as a youngster, he was impaled on a tree branch. Of course, Toquinho in Portuguese means tree stump, and it's referring more to his build as a short and stocky fighter. But he was impaled on a tree stump, and it caused a huge gash. And his family lives so far from any type of modern medicine, and they couldn't afford it anyway, that they used scotch tape to close this wound on his chest that, by the looks of it, had to be at least a little bit life-threatening, if not scary. And every time I've ever talked to Husamar, like many Brazilians, he refers to God first and foremost. He's very humble in the way that he speaks, and I just don't get the feeling that he's an evil guy. But you can't defend what's happening over and over. There's too many times. It's that old saying, I guess, you know, screw me once, shame on you. Screw me twice, shame on me. And this is multiple times for Husamar Pahara. And sure, you can point in every situation to, well, you know, what about this or what about that? And yes, there's variables and there's potential explanations. But, you know, when somebody is at the center of controversy over and over and over and over, you got to start wondering what role they play in those controversies. And so I think we've definitely come to that moment with Husamar Pahara. I watched the video. I can't tell for sure if he really raked Jake Shields' eyes. It looked like he put his hands across the face, but that's not something we've seen a lot of. So there's something there. And I just hope that, honestly, that Husamar, somebody can figure out what it is. They can get this guy help, because that was an amazing fight, and I love watching Husamar Pahara's fight. He is an incredibly gifted tactician. It would be a shame for us not to see him again, so I'm not really down for a lifetime ban, as I've seen some people calling for, but at the same time, you can't be going in the cage and purposely, you know, willfully neglecting the rules and trying to hurt somebody. The sport is already dangerous enough as it is. As long as it's competed under the rules that we've made for it, I think it's relatively safe, or as safe as it can be when you're considering that this is essentially hand-to-hand combat. But when you've got somebody in there that's blatantly disregarding policy, blatantly disregarding rules, that's scary. So I hope we haven't seen the last of Husamar Pahara. I do think something needs to be done. I imagine the Nevada State Athletic Commission will be issuing some type of suspension, you know, whether it be 9 months, a year, something along those lines. It'll probably cost Husamar one or two fights. What happens from there, we'll see what World Series of Fighting thinks.
I'd like to see him back at World Series of Fighting. Maybe a rematch with Jake Shields. But I just hope somebody can figure out what's wrong with this guy and get it fixed, because I think he's too good to not be in the sport. But as it is now, I don't think he can continue on under the current guidelines. So, as we said, back in Las Vegas. So you know what that means. Buffalo Wild Wings, Warm Springs, and Durango. That's where I'm sitting right now. I've got an ice-cold, frosty beverage right here in front of me. But I'm all by myself. My man Cold Coffee is in Nashville, Tennessee. He is covering the UFC event this weekend. Glover Teixeira versus Ovince St. Preux, UFC Fight Night. What, 73? I lose track when I'm out there. Yeah, UFC Fight Night 73. So that's why he's not here. So I'm just handling things my own. I just got home yesterday and was catching up with my kid this afternoon, spent some time playing in the pool, which was fantastic, and figured I'd just knock this out on my own. So hopefully everybody's okay just hearing my voice right now. I do want to say one thing about Cold Coffee's past weekend. He was at that World Series event, and we've covered the Usman Poirier thing quite a bit. But the other interesting thing that happened there, of course, Khabib Nurmagomedov brawling with the Diaz brothers. Now, certainly not a bright, shining moment for anybody involved in mixed martial arts, but interesting nonetheless. I will say, first off, I really think that shows the importance of operations on the ground level. You know, World Series of Fighting is still a relatively new organization. They've been around a couple of years, yes, but only hosted 22 events now. Compared to some other organizations out there that have hosted hundreds, I think they're still learning the ropes. And I think this is something you really have to be careful of. I'm assuming that Khabib Nurmagomedov got comp tickets. I'm assuming that the Diaz brothers got comp tickets. I may be wrong in that assumption. I didn't reach out to World Series of Fighting officials. Maybe they just happened to buy tickets and they happened to be in the same section, but I'm guessing that's not the case. I'm guessing they got comp tickets and they weren't separated. They've got to be made sure that they're on different sides of the cage. I think you have to be very, very aware of situations like that. And I'm not blaming anybody in particular, saying I think it's just an oversight that people are learning about. You know, we talked to Alex Davis earlier in the show about Donald Cerrone sitting cage side and giving instructions to his cornerman. I mean, can't really blame anybody for that. It's just kind of an oversight that people didn't think of that you learn through experience. But I think this will be a lesson for World Series of Fighting. Be very, very careful where you assign seats when you're giving out comp tickets, because, yes, you want, you know, celebrities and athletes to be there, but you have to be very, very careful that you're not making things worse and potentially setting up any type of situation like this. Again, not saying that they made this happen, but maybe it could have been a little bit avoidable. That said, now that it has happened, got to do Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Nate Diaz. Ali Abdelaziz said it. You know, they're not even his fighters, but he said they should do that in the UFC, and I completely agree with him 100%. Khabib Nurmagomedov is not ready for a title shot right now because of the way things fell with his injuries and all that. Certainly he's earned the title shot, but we know that timing is a big part of that as well. The way that the timing has worked out, he's going to have to wait a little bit, and I think if you're going to put a fight together, why not put a fight together that is meaningful in the division but also would really get fans' interest? And you can't tell me that little snippet of video. And we have some. Cold Coffee just happened to be sitting at Press Row doing some editing and grabbed his camera and was able to shoot some of it. Whether or not World Series of Fighting was able to get any, I don't know. And whether or not they turned that over to the UFC, I don't know. But the fact is there is footage of it that exists. I think there's some iPhone footage, that sort of thing. I would love to see the fight put together. It's a meaningful fight. You know, Nate Diaz, it doesn't matter what kind of win-loss record that he's coming on. He's a guy you can put against anybody in the division because he's fun to watch fight. And now that there's this natural rivalry there, I think you got to do it. So, USC, Joe Silva, if you're listening, book this fight, please. Book this fight. All right. Let's talk about USC Fight Night 73. Cold Coffee is out there, and I did want to let him chime into the show as well, and the way he's going to do that is him and Matt Erickson are out there working hard together in Nashville, Tennessee, and wanted to share their interviews with the main event fighters and let you hear a little bit about what's going on out there in Nashville, Tennessee. And we're going to start out with Glover Teixeira. Glover Teixeira, good dude. Good dude. You know, getting up there a little bit, 35 years old. We'll turn 36 later this year. That coming from a 37-year-old journalist probably doesn't mean much. But, you know, he has been going through some injuries lately. He is on the back of a couple of losses. And I think this is a big, big fight for him. I think for him and Ovince St. Preux both, it's a big, big fight. And, you know, Glover is a guy that's fun to watch. Of course, his finishes, you know, a couple of interesting stories in my career, I guess, have crossed paths with Glover Teixeira. You know, I think everybody knew about Glover, but he was having trouble getting into the United States. He was having some visa issues for the longest time and couldn't compete in the United States. So the first time I ever got to see him compete from cage side was really a very fortunate night. It was a fight in August 2011 against Marvin Eastman at Chuto, Brazil, a fight for Bope. This was one of the coolest experiences I've had to this date. Calling fights for Access TV, it was HDNet back then, of course, but calling fights at the Bope training grounds, which is the Brazilian Special Forces training grounds there in Rio de Janeiro. And the way this worked out was it was supposed to be a Michael Schiavello gig, but Michael Schiavello had his car broken into about a week or so before that event, and his passport was one of the items that was stolen out of his car. And as it worked out, Andrew Simon, the president of HDNet Fights, is a Vegas resident as well, knew that I was going down and asked me, hey, would you be willing to call fights for us on the Bope training grounds, the Special Forces training ground? And by the way, your broadcast partner is going to be Royce Gracie. And, you know, this was trip number one for me to Brazil. This was the very first trip I ever had to Brazil. So, you know, it was already a special experience, it was, but getting to do that was made it even better. When the main event came around, when it was Marvin Eastman and Glover Teixeira, Uriah Faber, actually, who had cornered early in the night, actually sat down on the broadcast crew as well. So, obviously, a star-studded panel there, sans myself, just a fantastic experience. And it was the night before the weigh-ins. I want to say this was Thursday night, and it was the very first time that I had heard the now-famous U Vai Moreira chants that the Brazilians are certainly so famous for now. And it's an experience I'll never forget because two of the fights on the night were actually between Brazilian Special Forces trainees that were fighting and two Argentinian fighters. Now, Brazil and Argentina have a very intense rivalry, and from what I understand, it would be tough to get Brazilian fighters to fight Special Forces officers. You know, there's kind of respect for them and that sort of thing. So they brought in Argentinian fighters. Now, we're at the top of this mountain. You drive up this street, this very narrow street. There's this sign as you drive up that has the Bope insignia on it. Now, this Bope insignia is essentially a skull and crossbones, but it's a skull and two guns crossed. You've probably seen it on Paulo Thiago's walkout gear in the past. And there's a message on it in Portuguese, and I asked somebody, what does it say as we're driving up there in their bus? And it says, visitors welcome, but make no sudden movements. And, you know, I mean, there's guys training to be killers up there. You know, as the opening ceremonies are going away, they fire off these cannons, just scared the hell out of me. There's Bope Special Forces officers, you know, in full gear, cage side. They've got guns on their side. They've got their uniforms on. Everything's, you know, this incredibly intense environment. And then when these two fights come on between Brazil and Argentina, the Argentinians, it obviously steps up to even another level. And there's all these chants going on. It's very cool. And these U Vai Moreira chants are going on over and over. And I'm trying to set the tone, doing my what little broadcasting I know how to do, and saying, you know, wow, you know, listen to the – look at the passion. Look at the intensity. Hear the chants. I mean, what a great feeling, Royce. And Royce says, they're saying you're going to die. Just deadpans it like that. And I don't know if he's joking or I'm assuming he's serious. And I see a lot of people over there with guns on their hips, and they're saying you're going to die. I didn't know what to say, so I just went back. And in the blue corner, you know, I didn't know how to carry the story on from there. So that threw me off my game a little bit. But Glover Teixeira won that fight, first-round knockout over Marvin Eastman. He would have one more fight in Brazil before finally making his way to the UFC at UFC 146. But anybody that knows Glover Teixeira will tell you, despite the fact that he's an absolute beast in the cage, he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And another great experience I had with him, June 2013, he was actually a guest fighter in Fortaleza. And there was a tree planting. It was a community outreach program from the UFC. It was a tree planting ceremony at Coco Park. I've actually wrote a story. I'll tweet out the link so you guys can see it, because there's some pictures of Camila Oliveira in shorts, which isn't too terrible to look at either. But Glover Teixeira, Demian Maia, and Camila Oliveira went to this park, extremely hot. Fortaleza is the hottest place I've ever been on the face of the earth. It is right by the equator, direct sun, it's hot. And they were part of this tree planting ceremony in this park there. And it was basically a way for the UFC to show that, yes, we're coming to town, but we're not causing any emissions. We're giving back, you know, the whole carbon footprint thing and yada, yada, yada. So anyway, we're out there planting trees, and I'm just taking pictures of it and documenting it just to bring some pictures back from Brazil. And because there's an Octagon girl in shorts. So I figured, what the heck. But I can tell you that Glover Teixeira was so awesome at this thing. There were all these kids there as well, and everybody's going through this ceremonial tree planting. But he was actually, I mean, really getting down the dirt. He used to be a gardener. I mean, that's how he paid the bills. He did gardening work and lawn care work and lawn maintenance. And he knew how to plant a tree. And this guy was down on his hands and knees in the dirt explaining to kids the proper way to plant the tree and how it needs water and how to pack it just right and you know, pack it tight with soil but not too tight and let it breathe and really just, oh man, a gentle giant, so to speak. You know, it was really cool to see. It was an experience that that I'll certainly never forget. And Glover Teixeira is, while he's a menace in the cage, man, he loves to smile. He loves to talk and to just have a good time, and really one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. So big fight for him, though. I think the John Jones fight certainly was disappointing for him. He wants that fight again. He wants John Jones to get healthy, and he'll talk about that. He wants that fight again. But the Phil Davis fight was the one that I think left a lot of people really questioning what he's capable of. But, you know, he says, listen, I had some weight-cutting issues there, and I've fixed those. I never got above 230 from that October 2014 fight until now. And so this is a big fight. I actually picked against Glover Teixeira, and I think a lot of it was honestly the fact that he's had some injuries and the feeling that his last two fights haven't been his best performances. And that, you know, maybe Ovince St. Preux is a guy on the way up. But we'll see. I just think this is a huge fight for Glover Teixeira. So while I get myself another frosty cold beverage here, I want you to sit back and relax and listen to Glover Teixeira, hear the work of our man Cold Coffee out there in Nashville, Tennessee, as well as good old Matt Erickson, MMA Junkie Matt, as they are on scene covering UFC Fight Night 73.
How's it going, man? Feeling good?
Yeah, feeling good, man.
It's been a while since we've seen you. Talk us kind of through the, you know, what it feels like to be finally getting back in there about 10 months now after you were last in there.
I'm feeling great, man. You know, it's a great feeling. I'm in the best shape of my life, and we're ready to throw some leather.
You guys always say that kind of stuff. You're the best shape of your career, best camp you've ever had. Talk us through the injury that you had and what it was like having to kind of rebound from that.
Well, when you say you gotta go back and look my interviews. I say that a few times. I say that for John's fight, and I wasn't in very good shape for that fight. I didn't say that my last fight. My weight cut was rough, but anyway, man, this is like this is as light as I've been in the weight, and you know, it's just I've been with a different coach now, working my speed and my ability to avoid the counter punch. You know, it's great for this type of fight, and I'm very excited to go over there and throw an excited fight for the fans.
Other than like the weight issues that you mentioned, are there things that you take out of the Jones fight and the Davis fight that you apply now, you know, 10 months after the fact, going into this fight?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm looking like the experience of me being you know, with 27 fights right now, it just adds up the experience. You know, you learn with the loss, you learn with the victory. You know, I learned with the Bader fight. You know, a few stuff that happens there. I learned with Maldonado fights. I mean, you learn with victory and definitely with the loss. Camp with Phil Davis was great camp. You know, and I throw everything away in the last week. So I mean, it's just learning experience every time. And every time I step in octagon, I'll be 100%.
Let's talk a little bit about the matchup with St. Preux. Were there any particular fights that you were able to watch that were beneficial to help your strategy?
Yeah, you know, some of the fights, he's a very good counter puncher. You know, he's a very explosive fighter. You know, and he have the knockout power. And this guy's he's dangerous. You know, he's got a crazy submission. I mean, he's an excited fight. You know, he's gonna be an excited
excited fight for the fans, you know. So I'm looking forward to this fight, you know. This guy is no joke, and like I say, you know, I'm looking to put my hands on his face, and with the speed, and I gotta be in top shape to find the top contender.
You said you wanted to use your hands, but you feel like you have an advantage on the ground. I mean, he struggled against Ryan Bader and wrestlers in the back. Take advantage from top position.
It's one of those things, man. I see what the open is, you know. I'm confident in my hand, and I'm confident in my ground. You know, I see what the fight goes, what's open for me. I train like I told you, my coach is the one that do all the studying. And the guy, I usually watch a fight like one or two times, but I'm pretty much just, you know, I train for everything. I just go over there, you know. I'm a mixed martial artist. I don't have a background in something to say, you know, I'm a wrestler, and I'm a jiu-jitsu fighter or a boxer, you know. I'm just an MMA fighter. I started this.
With John Jones on the shelf, suspended indefinitely, does the division feel more wide open with Cormier as champion? What's your overall sense of the 205-pound weight class?
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, they take the number one guy. You know, the division, it is open. It's sad to say. It's better for us in a way, but like, yeah, it's nothing like. I hope the Jones get back to the octagon, because that's something like professionally inside the octagon. You know, it's been time that I ruined against him, but right now in the personal life, I just hope all the best for him and he come back and he give us a great fight again.
Brought in some new coaches. Why do you feel like you needed to make the change after the last couple of fights?
It's not my new coach. This guy is the guy that I start with. This is the guy that pretty much showed me how to throw my first jab. I went and I trained with, I'm blessed with coaches, man, you know. And, you know, my character, you know, I just keep them, like, with me. This guy was fighting at the time, and he couldn't train me. And I went to John Hackman School and trained with John, and John was a great coach. But now I'm in Connecticut. I have my life over there, and this guy's, he's even in Connecticut. He's retired fighting, and he's a great coach. He's doing an incredible job.
You talked about the state of the division right now. Do you feel like this is the type of win that puts you right back in there immediately, given that Gustafson is in a title shot now and he's coming off a loss?
Repeat that question, please.
Do you feel like this is the type of win that could put you right back into a title fight, given that Gustafson's got a title fight and he's coming off a loss right now?
Yeah, you know, I don't. This is not my job to do it, man. I don't want to be here and say what they should do or not. They are obviously doing a great job running the company, and they put me in face with the champion after this fight. The first, I got to look forward to this fight and. Looking great and walk out of the octagon with a victory, with a great victory, and I see what I know they're gonna watch me, and they're gonna want me to put you with the champion, you know.
Did you give any thought to him fighting kind of in his backyard, in his home state, in his home area? Does that bother you at all? Does that anything you think about leading up to the fight?
You know, this is like it's always great to fight with the crowd behind you, but this is as a professional, you have to deal with the situation. You have to deal with the situation. The fans, the MMA fans, is great. You know, I fought John Jones over there in Baltimore in his backyard, and when I walk out of the octagon, you know, the credit that people give me and the support they give me is great, man. You know, I was telling early. I don't have too much fans. I don't have 2 million fans on Twitter, but the 90,000 I have, they are very supportive for me.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Glover Teixeira from Nashville, Tennessee. Glover, that's exactly how you're supposed to say it, right? I've learned from my multiple trips down to Brazil. Again, big fight for him, but big fight as well for Vince St. Preux. Vince had a chance to watch a lot of his fights cage side over the years and really just seen him
progress. And that's what's been incredible. You know, his run through Strikeforce, his run through the UFC, just getting a chance to see him. You know, there's nothing about him that you point to that you stand out and just go, wow, his jiu-jitsu is so amazing. You know, there's no way anybody can grapple with him, or, oh, my gosh, his striking is so precise or so powerful, or anything like that. It's just that, you know, we say it all the time. It's becoming almost a cliche, but it's that new breed of athletes that hopefully is being attracted to mixed martial arts. You know, a former football player who almost made it the highest level, didn't quite, but certainly was right up there amongst the elite level athletes in the world, and took his game to mixed martial arts, and has remained extremely dedicated, extremely hardworking, and just keeps getting better and better and better. You know, coming off a knockout of Patrick Cummins, I mean, good Lord, what was Fei Zhao doing to Patrick Cummins a week ago and couldn't get that finish? And, you know, a TKO Shogun Hua as well. And I think at the time we were all thinking, you know, Shogun Hua had seen better days, but, you know, he's shown a little. I mean, listen, it's just a big time for Ovince St. Preux, because there's question marks, but there's something that you're seeing, that you're certainly trying to put your finger on and saying, the guy has something. And you'll hear him talk about it here, but he talks about the fact that he reinvents himself every time he fights. And I concur with that wholeheartedly. I feel like every time you see him, you see something a little bit different, a little bit better version, a little bit more complete version. And I'm excited. I know this with all the fights, it's easier for fights to slip under the radar. And there's some other good ones on this card. We're not really talking a whole lot about it because I'm not there. I'm actually just enjoying being back home and spending a little bit of time with my family. But there are some good fights on this card. But definitely I like this main event a lot because I feel like it's really meaningful for both participants. So I really feel like this is Ovince St. Preux's opportunity to show that he's legit and that he is somebody to talk about in the division and not just somebody that's taking up space on the roster and not just a prospect who may show some upside someday. Now, you know, I think sometimes we do forget he did come to the sport a little bit later than most. So he is 32 years old. He turned 32 earlier this year. So it's not like he's got all the time in the world to develop his game. So I think this is a big moment for both men. So anyway, without further ado, I'm going to keep this break short because I'm here by myself. And I just as soon go ahead and order another beverage since I'm here by myself. It's kind of depressing. So all by myself at Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs in Durango. That's me having a frosty beverage. Meanwhile, my boys Cold Coffee and Matt Eggs are in Nashville, Tennessee. So let's hear what Ovince St. Preux has to say.
So we talked a few weeks ago in Florida, man, about how excited you were to be able to come back here and fight in Nashville. So now that it's here, how's it been feeling?
Been feeling good, to be quite honest. Kind of taking everything in. We're just waiting on Saturday night to put on a good show. But overall, all the atmosphere been feeling pretty good.
The build-up kind of to that, knowing that you're fighting here and you know, in front of the home fans, you use that to kind of motivate you in the weeks every week as it gets closer.
I mean, I have to. I mean, fighting in front of home crowd, not too many people get to do that too often. So every time you do that, you want to capitalize within the situation. So I'm feeling real good being in front of the home crowd. Plus, I always do well in front of the home crowd too.
So no pressure, because you've been here before, you've done this before in front of them before.
No pressure.
A lot of guys do feel that pressure though.
No pressure at all. No pressure at all. You get fueled off of it. So
you've obviously been in the main event before in the UFC, the second time around. What's the biggest difference now versus going into like maybe that Ryan Bader fight? Is that good experience? Like, what's the big difference going in the second?
You know, the first one I had with Bader, everything kind of, it was the first time. Maybe it was just new. But, you know, went against Shogun was like a last-minute main event. I did well against that. And, you know, now it's just like I'm kind of used to it now. You know, out of my last four fights, I've been three main events. So, you know, I'm used to it now and just kind of capitalizing on everything. and you know, it's a main event on a Fox Sports 1 card, and hopefully soon you'll be seeing me in a main event in a pay-per-view card.
We see that this division, light heavyweight division, the top five has been pretty much the same guys for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. You look at John, you look at DC, you look at Rashad, you know, Glover's been there. You're the guy. You seem like the best prospect to kind of crack that top five and make that run to the title. Do you feel like this is kind of your showcase to prove that?
Definitely. You know, this is one of the biggest reasons why, you know, I'm doing what I'm doing right now. I tell everybody, I told my trainer, Eric Turner, like, I think it was like my second or third amateur fight. Like, you know, how far I can make it so you can be the UFC champ. And ever since I heard that, that's all I needed. You see, I'm ranked number 6 right now, and slowly climbing up.
I don't want to look past Glover to share at all, but even mixing Glover into this question, I mean, how do you feel you match up with those guys when you look at a Rashad, you look at a Daniel Cormier, who's the champ, and Alexander Gustin? I mean, can you look at those guys now and see ways that you win all those fights?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's a – you see, I can see myself actually – you know, competing with those guys and beating those guys, and they can actually see me being a big problem right now. So I know a lot of people watch it. You know, when I fought Shogun, a lot of people was like, okay, whatever. And, you know, I fought Cummins. A lot of people talking about my wrestling. I told people he's a 2-time All-American. He better take me down. The fact is he going to be able to keep me down? Now people's watching me against Glover, and they're going to actually see, you know, how I'm going to perform against Glover. Glover's very durable, well-rounded and everything. So, but, you know, with me, I think I'm younger, faster, stronger, and, you know, I just have, you know, a lot of momentum going my way. So I feel really good.
You feel like you are going to have a lot of eyeballs on you on Saturday night, that all those guys in front of you are going to be kind of watching? Because, like I said, you seem like knocking out Shogun the way you did and then knocking out Cummins, who we just saw what he did last week, and he's a super talented guy. So do you feel like you do kind of have the eyeballs on you right now because you seem like, you know, maybe that dangerous guy that's coming up?
I do. If I was them, I would have eyeballs on me too. So I definitely feel that.
Kind of break Glover down for us. You know, what are his strengths in terms of how he matches up with you?
I mean, the thing about Glover, overall his, you know, striking, jiu-jitsu, and even wrestling is pretty good. He's very durable, he'll like coming forward and stuff. But, you know, the thing about Glover, too, he's extremely aggressive. And, you know, if you see all my fights, people that get aggressive towards me, and I usually capitalize very well against that. And, you know, that's what I'm planning on doing. If he sits back, I still can capitalize on that, too. I think I think my movements, he's going to have a lot of problems with my movements. But, like I said, if he comes, you know, within reach and distance of me, I can crack it pretty good.
How often did you watch, especially his last two fights, the Jones fight and the Phil Davis fight and the build-up to this?
You know, I watched some of his fights. But, you know, just the Phil Davis fight, just to let me know what certain stuff I can capitalize on. And if I hope, I want to keep the fight standing. But, you know, if that don't happen, you know, I got different things I can neutralize him with, too.
You come from the school where you stayed homegrown. I think Conor McGregor said a lot about this, about everyone. You know, he says guys don't need to go to super camps. You know, he's stuck with his team and they've gotten him to the title. Do you feel kind of the same way? Because you kind of stuck with your guys from the early days till now and they've got you this far. I mean, is that a big part of loyalty? I mean, that you don't necessarily have to travel to a, you know, American top team or other gym. It seems like you kind of stayed loyal to the guys that got you.
Yeah, it's also one of the things where, you know, I've been an athlete all my life, so I recognize a good coach when I see one, especially with the way he breaks things down and, you know, how he opens my mind up to different things. And it's kind of funny, just like people always telling me, okay, you might need to start training with these guys. No, not necessarily. I mean, if you look at me fighting now, I have 6 fights in the UFC that I've won, and they all have been finished in a different fashion. And, you know, every time somebody look at me, they're always looking at me like, okay, what's going to happen next? And pretty much everything about me, like the fighter that I was when I fought Patrick 3 months ago, I'm completely different now. I might end up finishing the fight in a different fashion. You got fighters that have different telltale signs about them. You know, Glover is still the same fighter that he fought, you know, 5 fights ago. Am I the same fighter 2-3 fights ago? No. And my coach do a good job of reinventing me every time I fight.
Fighting
in where?
In Tennessee. Is that one of your goals in the UFC career? How do you
approach it? Definitely. Back in, January 2012, the UFC was here at the Bristol. And, you know, I got invited to, you know, be one of the special guest fighters there. And my number one thing was I want to fight here for the UFC. So, you know, the opportunity presented itself.
with the opportunity presenting itself, I end up being the main event, so that's even better.
I feel like you can go out there, what you can do now that you're the main event, you're fighting in Tennessee, you're 2 hours away from.
Not necessarily. You know, I know what I'm capable of, and, you know, people around me that train with me know what I'm capable of. You know, this guy's on this card that I trained before with, you know, Scott Holtzman is from Knoxville, I trained with him. He knows what I'm capable of, you know. Also, Dustin Ortiz is on this card, too. We started, you know, when I was fighting amateur, those guys were fighting amateur, too. So, my training know what I'm capable of. And it's funny, like, you know, everybody still has that doubt factor, you know. I'm the underdog this fight. I don't care. I'm usually always the underdog. So, it don't faze me at all.
So everyone has that doubt factor, but you don't have that doubt factor heading to this fight?
I mean, I'm the main event. I doubt.
A while back, you pushed for a battle with Tennessee with Rampage Jackson. It seemed like his management and his team, they weren't interested in the fight. How disappointing was that? And how close do you think it was coming to fruition?
I wasn't disappointed at all. It's just one of the situations where, you know, at this point in time, he's trying to find the best matchup for him. You know, to be honest, I don't blame him. So I wasn't disappointed at all. But, you know, I just wanted a good quality fighter. And, you know, I got one, so now it's time to be putting the work.
These days when you're kind of walking around in your hometown and around Tennessee, people recognize you more as Ovince St. Preux, former Tennessee football player, or Ovince St. Preux, UFC fighter?
Both. You know, there's been times just walking around. I forget sometimes just because I'm in my own little world, but there's times I'm walking around and people stop me and be like, man, I'm a big fan. I usually tell them thank you, so yeah.
Where will a win put you against Bogo?
Hopefully in the top three. You know, I got a, like I said, I got a good momentum going, and I just want to open eyes within the 205 division, and you know, with this fight, it's definitely going to open some eyes.
What does Glover bring to the table?
Durability, power, and aggressiveness, which, you know, I think for myself, I can overcome. You know, just looking at the fights, certain fights I've been through, it was just like, you know, for example, the Shogun fight. I'm the only one to ever knock him out in the first round. And that just kind of lets you know something. I'm excited. But, you know, a lot of people are saying how I'm going to deal with Glover's power. I mean, I got power too, just remember that. I mean, the same situation with Shogun, how you gonna deal with Shogun power? I got power too, so, you know.
You said that you are a new fighter now from even 3 months ago. So I gotta ask the question, if you had that chance to rematch Ryan Bader now, how different would that fight be?
Given my past two fights, how different do you think it would be? So my mindset during that fight wasn't where it needed to be. But, you know, things happen for a reason. That loss was actually, I'm appreciative for that loss because, you know, it kind of reset me. Let me know that, you know, just go back to the basics. I mean, I don't need to do anything to try to, you know, get over myself. I just need to go back to the basics, stick to the basics, start drilling, and that's what I started doing more. And, you know, led me to two good wins.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Ovince St. Preux from Nashville, Tennessee. Cole Coffey and MMA Junkie Matt bringing you that one. Me, I'm still sitting here enjoying frosty beverages at Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs and Durango in Las Vegas. I'm a trooper, but I'm here by myself. It's kind of depressing. I'm kind of sad about it. I'm a little down. The MMA Roadshow, dry dock, not traveling, all by himself. So for that reason, I'm not going to stick around too long. I'm not going to make you listen to too much of me rambling. But I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I will say, big combat sports weekend ahead. I am going to go to Glory Friday night. So by the time you're listening to this on Friday morning or whenever you do listen to it, I may have already gone. But Friday night, I'll be at Glory Kickboxing in Las Vegas. So I'm anxious to check that out. It'll be my first Glory event to attend live. So looking forward to having a little bit of fun there. And then Saturday night, well, your boy got asked by the Lingerie Fighting Championships if he would be interested in participating on the broadcast team. And I thought long and hard, about 2 seconds, and said, yes,
I will be part of that broadcast team. So I will be at Hard Rock Hotel both Friday and Saturday night, first for Glory Kickboxing and second for the Lingerie Fighting Championships, which I will not profess to know a whole ton about at this moment, but I certainly look forward to telling you all about it next week. So do us a favor. Download this. You know where you can get it. You can get it at the MMA Roadshow if you're listening to the first time. You can download every week at the MMA Roadshow. You can get it on iTunes. If you're going to get it on iTunes, review us. Subscribe to us. Review us. Leave us some ratings. We'd appreciate all that as we continue to try to help this thing grow and figure out what direction we're taking it. But in the meantime, hopefully you're enjoying it each and every week. Follow us, of course, on Instagram at the MMA Roadshow so you can see pictures of what we're doing every week as we travel the road, myself and Colt Coffey. Follow me, of course, at MMA Junkie John. And more than anything, just know that I really appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
One more. We're in Music City here. Nashville's Music City. Can you kind of give us three bands or three songs that are kind of on your playlist right now that you're listening to?
Hey man, country is my is in my blood. You know, Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley. I listened to those guys at the time, but Johnny Cash is like, I have a bunch of songs that I have a CD over there that like, but I'm not gonna sing, man. I could sing. I could put out some songs over here. But I'll let you the next time. You know what I mean? I'm not a. But the country, this is my song. I work out with the country, sometimes Brazilian country, and American country. But like, I'm telling you, man, this is my favorite country music. Is my favorite music.
Playlist music-wise,
yeah.
I couldn't even tell you. But I got a good one when I'm walking up for my walkout song.
You're not gonna spoil that for us?
I can't.
No.
I can't.
When you're training?
A little bit of hip hop. I like listening to certain beats to get me going and stuff. So yeah.
Not a country music guy?
Well, recently I did start listening to a lot of country music.
Yeah.
So,
it's growing on you?
Growing on me.